something interesting happened as we have gone along the path to doing these. We had what amounts to a really peculiar, like, it's only happened once in the entire time that we've been doing this podcast, very strange, like, sort of Doppler reverb thing that rendered a lot of our original recording of the Run DMC record, unfortunately, like, almost unlistenable.
Not that the record's itself unlistenable. Our talking about it.
Yes, our commentary was rendered moot. Anyway, it occurred to me today, because I'm leaning into the fact that that this will be your first time, if you're listening to the podcast, this will be your first time to hear us talk about the Run DMC record that we're going to talk about tonight, but we've attempted to do this once before, and we're doing it again on Groundhog Day.
Okay. Oh, that's wow. Nice.
I didn't see that set up either, but one thing I was going to jump in and say a second ago is there's no way, like, because we were just beating you down at the end of the last episode for all your dad humor, and I was like, oh, yeah, Kevin deliberately sabotaged it. And then, but no, he starts the whole thing out.
Yeah, the whole thing was an elaborate ruse just for that joke.
Yes, it was. I was like, come on, calendar.
But in fact, it is February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Do we know what the groundhog did?
It's Phil? 6 more weeks of this, apparently.
Right, well, I know it bit a mayor somewhere.
Six more weeks of us sitting in this garage.
Yeah.
Bitterly
yes,
cold.
Exactly. Yes. The groundhog is now getting very specific with his prognostications, and it has to do with where you sit at any given time. But anyway, yeah, so it is. It's Groundhog Day. It won't be Groundhog Day probably when you hear this, but nevertheless, we are covering old ground, and like so many Bill Murrays, we'll have lots to say.
It's true. And I'm not sick this time. I was sick last time when we originally attempted to record this.
Yeah, you were sick, and there was a brotherly tiff.
There was a brotherly tiff.
Regarding who was going
to
sit
turns
where.
Out, it turns out the reason I was really upset about not being able to sit in my chair is that I was sick, and when I'm not sick, I don't give a shit. So.
Okay. Hey, so the other upside to doing this show tonight is that we also get to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl halftime show.
Which
happened for us yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let's all in due time. Let's go ahead and let's play some music first. Gentlemen, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
This is Somebody Likes It. Kevin, you mentioned the Super Bowl. Wait, before we start about and talk about the Super Bowl, which was last night, why did you show up with so much alcohol? Normally, Kevin comes in with maybe a six pack for this, but he came in with 2 6 packs and a bottle of wine.
Well,
did you throw
totally
a Super Bowl party and nobody came?
Yes, exactly. No, I don't really have a terrific reason behind it. I think it just came down to the fact
he's really
that, like,
thirsty.
Yes, exactly. I was like, my job is to become obliterated by halfway through the show. Now that
that would not be unprecedented, not for you necessarily.
He did say that though. That was the reason given.
No, in all reality, I just couldn't decide what I wanted, and it's a little cool out. We have the heater working in the garage, and so I got some vanilla porter, which is a great winter beer, and I wanted a little taste of wine, and so I got some wine, and then I was like, oh, there's this lager that I like, and so I just, anyway, the guy was like, do you want to call somebody? But, exactly. But anyway, I'm not drinking all of them, I'm only drinking some of them, and I might not drink them in the same order. So, yeah, I wish I had a better.
But you do have a chalice going. It's not the chalice.
I do have, yes. Mark is furnishing me with it. It's a guest chalice. The Le Fin du Monde.
So it's the nice chalice they never use.
Yes. It's in the special place.
What was the question that you posited to all of us, Ryan, before when you first got here?
Oh, how hot is Katy Perry?
Hot.
Yeah.
Damn. Like, well, she's right at the cross section between really cute and really hot. And I don't give two shits about her music.
Definitely on the hot side there, buddy.
Have you guys, this is tangential, well, it's directly related. Did anybody here, Mark, I bet you did for sure. Did any of you guys follow the dancing shark meme that was floating around the internet today about her performance yesterday at the Super Bowl?
I saw something about that, but I didn't dig into it.
Yeah, I saw something like refer to it, but
basically this is the gist. And I guess by the time that this comes out, everybody will be like, oh yeah, that old thing. But anyway, I'm going to tell you now because it's still new here. There were one of the songs that she sang, she was flanked on either side by a giant shark. Like a standing dancing shark,
and she was wearing like an adorable sundress. By the way,
yeah. and one of
with
the sharks,
beach ball brassiere.
Yes, one of the sharks was mimicking her every move, and the other shark might have been having a seizure. Like it was just like couldn't be less on time. And so there were all kinds of like vines and stuff floating around on the web, and I was all over Twitter about Katy Perry and the rogue shark. And so it became a flip book today. Like I saw that.
Kevin, do you have a hashtag for that?
Hashtag spazzy shark.
Good times.
Did you guys ever see that that thing a few years ago where she did an episode of Sesame Street and it got banned. It got banned because she's too jiggly when she's jumping up and down.
It was too scoop neck or whatever, and there was too much cleavage or whatever. Amply proportioned in that area.
They bounce a lot in this tight red top that she's wearing, and she's jumping up and down.
I can watch her do that all day.
I bet it was an Oscar that sold her out. That's all I'm saying.
I don't even know what that means. Why don't we get off of Katy Perry?
Just making me think of the Dandy Warhol's keyboardist.
We won't get into that. Did you guys actually watch any football?
I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic game.
It was a really good game.
Yeah,
a really inexplicable call at the end.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even care that much for the game.
Seamus, baseball guy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But the halftime show, yeah, highlight.
Well, and there
and
was
Katy
that.
Perry made sure that the balls stayed inflated.
Well, okay, so the joke that apparently was going around today on Twitter, not that I'm on Twitter, but I have heard, was that when Missy Elliott came out, she was going to wear like the big inflatable suit, but she was worried Tom Brady was going to take the air out of it.
See?
It's just, now I got to think of a dad joke here tonight. I'm sure it's
Why don't we talk about
up.
Run DMC?
Yeah. So Ryan, you picked.
I'm having this weirdest deja vu right now. I picked Run DMC's transitional record from 1988, Tougher Than Leather. At this point, they were probably the biggest name in hip hop.
Yeah, without a doubt, I think. I mean, they're the first hip hop.
Beastie Boys were still coming on.
And is it true that the working title for this record was a lot like pleather? Tougher than pleather. Most things are.
Yeah.
Which probably doesn't make for very. It's like you don't need a lot of rap street cred out of tougher than pleather.
Burns like polyester, I believe, was what it was called.
Anyway, no, I did think it was really interesting that you picked this record, and it gets sort of banned. This is another one of these that I think sort of gets looked at through rose-colored glasses a little bit in hindsight. Collectively, the reviews that the old school, the pro reviews that were happening at the time when this record came out, thought it was a fine, better than average. You know, it was to use the baseball metaphor, Shane, it was a double and not a home run.
Yeah, I mean, I like this record quite a bit more than anything that preceded it. Run DMC is the first rap act that I remember, my first memories of hearing rap were definitely hearing Run DMC.
Grandmaster Flash happened without your awareness, and then
yeah. This is the first. I mean, I grew up in small town Texas, this. They hit the airwaves first. They were the first rap act, to my knowledge, that had the most success earliest on. But I never really liked them that much because their rhymes and their beats are so simple in the beginning.
Right.
This one, you start adding some more complexity to the way that they were rhyming into the beats. I mean, it kicks off with Funky Drummer, right? I mean, the first song on the record.
The sample, yeah.
I mean,
this is one of these, forgive me for interrupting, but it is Funky Drummer's
James Brown?
If you have seen the James Brown documentary, one of the things that gets talked about in that documentary is they had his band had come back off the road, and he had them scheduled to go into the studio, and they're all goddamn exhausted. And the drummer just went in and sat down, and he was like, okay, this is it. This is what you get. And he did that little sleepy, you know, like skip step.
Breakbeat thing.
Yeah, yeah. Breakbeat thing. And it became, I mean, frankly, Public Enemy is all over that breakbeat. But
everybody
but
yeah, was at one point in the late 80s, early 90s. I think it peaked in like 92 where it was finding its way into Duran Duran songs and Sinead O'Connor songs, you know.
She's so funky.
She's quite funky.
Yes. No, I think if I'm not mistaken, War Pigs by Black Sabbath was kind of done in that same fashion. Like they were just jacking around, like waiting to record something else. And they just kinda,
I think Paranoid.
Is it Paranoid? Paranoid?
Yeah.
It's one of those, yeah. But anyway, like one of the like major songs minutes. From their catalog, yeah. And like they're just farting around, and they're like, no, why don't we just do that?
Yeah, the if I remember correctly, the producer was like, all right, you guys need to write me one more hit. And they went out and did it in like 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing that they were saying, flipping back to the James Brown thing was that drummer said that like apparently
Clyde Stubblefield
he said like apparently that the that
damn,
it
that's
was
some
his
knowledge.
Least like it was of the singles that James Brown ended up putting out, this one did the worst, so you know, for whatever reason. And then and what it did was sort of spark this major
a cult phenomenon
is I just think sort of speaks to, you know, we could sidebar on James Brown for a while, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, and that's okay. So that's one of the things about like the usage of the, of that. They definitely use more samples in this album.
This was like coming into like the sampling heyday, like right around this time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a sample. There were a couple of good. I mean, like Tribe Called Quest and
Three Little Planets.
Yeah, well, that was more like the jazz stuff that you can put in with Tribal Quest. But yeah. I'm thinking like De La Soul. De La Soul is actually what ended up breaking the camel's back. They have so many samples on that record. If they had had, and they're the ones that like, I mean, there's no way they could make that album today.
You're talking about 3 Feet High and Rising.
3 Feet High and Rising, yeah.
Which we have covered.
They just, Run DMC just starts delving into it because before this one, Tougher Than Leather, their original album, I think this, you know, why don't we listen to a song? We'll come back and we'll talk about that.
Well, okay, so.
So you had something you wanted to.
Well, Mary Mary is the reason I picked this record in the first place, because I know, I was like, at least there's one song that I know I love. And this is one of those songs that I can listen to. You can just hit repeat. Don't do that. But I can listen to it over and over again.
It also has a crazy origin story.
Well, that's true. That is true. And we'll cover that when we come out of it.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging? Mary, Mary, I need you hugging. Mary, Mary, I need you hugging.
I love that song so much, and as I pointed out to my colleagues as it was playing, you really don't hear a lot of rapping about hugs.
No, you don't. Yeah, it's sort of it's a different world.
It's a neglected corner of the hip-hop world.
Hugging?
Hugging. Because he needs her hugging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is really kind of quaint if you think about it.
It is. Yeah. It's like, well, especially if you think about...
Anacondas and...
Well, just like, you know, like, whatever, like gangster rap. Those guys never talk about hugs.
Like, bitch ain't giving me no hugs.
I heard a line from I might be paraphrasing, but I'm almost positive this is the way it went. I heard a rap song last summer, and the only line that I remember was, I got stupid money, make a bitch fall in love with my stupid money.
That is some inspired shit.
Did I tell you about my idea for I had two really great ideas for reality shows that have not happened, and I still think they should, and that reminds me of one of them. One of them that was unrelated was essentially like Donald Trump's The Apprentice, except that it was Who Wants to Be a Mobster? And the deal was, like, if you got voted off, you get whacked. And so those would be really tense sessions at the end of every show.
I don't think you'd ever really actually get a network to
you
go
might not
in.
Get the green light on that one.
Yeah. Maybe not. And the other one was Who Wants to Marry the Money? Because really, that's what it's about. Like, let's just take whoever her name is out of the equation. You can marry the cash itself.
It's just a pile of money.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Have, like, some, like, not even an anthropomorphic pile like, of money.
They could shape it into something.
If you had kids,
like,
with the money, would it be change?
Yes, exactly. And they say that's the only thing that's constant.
So, and this is the one that I wanted to get off the ground that I'm still holding out hope for, fingers crossed. Who Wants to Marry a Waiter?
Yes. This week, I guess, would that be the WB?
Potential contestants lined up down the block.
In Los Angeles.
They're not necessarily the hottest.
But anyway, I sidebarred us. So Mary Mary, based on what?
It's based on a song by the Monkees. And I found it in the course of doing research for this record. And I love both of them for different reasons. In the Run DMC version, he's kind of accusatory towards Mary. He's like, why are you bugging? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
In the Monkees version, the protagonist or singer, what have you, Davy Jones probably, is pathetic. He's like, you know, hey, no, I want you back and stuff.
Where are you going
Why don't we play a little bit of that and we can compare and contrast.
One of the things that you guys will not know, but I just witnessed here, was Ryan and Shane kind of talking about, like, how people would move to this song, like what you could see they were doing.
Shane was dancing, well, sort of in his chair, like Nancy Sinatra-ish.
Yeah, and there were, like, projected lava lamp things in the background, uh-huh. and real fast. Close
quick cuts, like, quick, yeah,
like
yeah,
in and right, out, right. And in and out.
Yeah,
you're like,
zoom
and like, down,
and like everything's on like a 45 degree angle, or
yeah. So Run DMC took a different tack with it.
I like that. I got to get my cough drop out of my mouth. I like that Monkees version of that song though. It starts out, it sounds like Madchester. It's like the Stone Roses.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can,
and the beat is clearly, obviously, the one that Run DMC aped.
It's a break beat.
Yeah,
yeah. But there, you know, that's interesting. Like, there's no snare drum in that. It's there's no trap kit at all. It's like a tambourine and like a maraca.
Yeah,
which you don't ever really notice because the whatever we're talking about Run DMC, not the Monkees.
Tambourine, the worldwide instrument of the 1960s.
Like, it's true. Yeah,
it's true.
It fell out of favor
for the cowbell.
Well, that's
true.
Accurate, the producer Mark. Thank you.
I played lead cowbell in my last band.
You don't want to be third chair on the cowbell.
No.
Was that your dunk? I heard like way in the background. producer Mark was telling us a little something during the break about, I guess, you looked up definitions of the word buggin'.
Buggin'. Yeah, so in the Monkees version, it's Mary Mary, where are you going to?
Yeah, which is like the most awkward way to put that in the world.
But in the Run DMC version, it's Mary Mary, why you bugging?
Right. So I went to that universal source, Urban Dictionary, and there's over 34 different definitions entered here for bugging, but this one really caught my eye. It says buggin' is a word used to describe strange or foolhardy behavior. This word can also be used to fill random voids when a lack of vocabulary occurs, mostly while describing another's actions.
Also, then, it could mean anything.
And then the first example, you know, they always put examples in context. The first example is Jesus. Judas, why you buggin'?
No, really?
Yes.
That's a pretty direct quote from the Aramaic.
Yeah. Yes. Just
wonder which version of the Bible that was.
Breaking out his Adidas.
Judas, why you bugging? Well, you got to be selling
Judas,
me out for
Judas.
Pieces of silver and shit.
Where are you going to?
Jesus.
Okay. The song that I like the most on this record, we're moving right along. That's okay. Is that okay? You guys all right?
I'm
okay.
Now.
Yes.
I mean, we can
let us move.
Okay. So, well, like I was saying before, I wasn't too keen on, it was fine. Like, you know, who doesn't love the Run-DMC Walk This Way? And they're definitely groundbreaking, but it's really, really simplistic. And a lot of that I think was driven by Rick Rubin's production.
I don't love Walk This Way.
Rick Rubin came.
No, I don't want to listen to it at my house, but if I hear it on the radio, yeah. I mean, it's, you know. It's
Rick Rubin came from punk rock roots, and he just kind of fell into doing hip hop production.
Well, he did it in a classic rock way. If you go back and listen to his early production, now he does amazing things, but if you go back and listen to his early production, I mean, and while they were groundbreaking, you know, 30 years on, they're just not as fun to listen to. Like how simplistic the beats were on License to Ill, for example. And he was more interested in bridging rock.
Fun fact about Rick Rubin, by the way, he doesn't twiddle knobs. He has engineers do that. Like,
true.
He doesn't touch the board.
There's a lot of producers
really
that do that.
That's really interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Stephen Street doesn't either. There's a lot of guys that...
Stephen Street of Smith's fame.
Cranberries.
He doesn't twiddle knobs either.
Uh-uh.
Twiddle knobs.
He doesn't twiddle.
We're five.
Twiddle knobs.
14, Kevin. We established this.
Oh, sorry. You're right.
Yeah, Lars has a theory that men hit the upper limit at 16, and then it's just you're just all growing out from there. You're never really growing up. Like,
No. We've got our little... You know, adolescent
you can
brains.
Hide it.
Yeah, in polite company.
I mean, perfect example, our Katy Perry conversation at the top of this show. I mean, that just shows our true color.
Oh, no, I think of her in that dress, and I'm just like, boobs.
But what I really like in this, and Rick Rubin produced that Mary Mary, and if you go back and listen, like, that is a breakbeat, but it's still really, really simple beat. And then, you go... a few tracks more into the album, and you get to Beats to the Rhyme, and that's where the shit really gets interesting to me, because I think this album would have been a transitional album in a lot of, and it was a transitional album, but they never followed up on the promise that they had in some of these songs.
Well, Run DMC didn't, but like, you know, they handed it off to like Public Enemy.
Well,
and to the Beastie Boys.
Well, in this next song, the Beastie Boys did the most dramatic turn around and then continue to go forward and really drive innovation in hip hop just throughout their career. In fact, they sample Public Enemy. So
Beastie Boys were on Def Jam. Is that
yes.
right? Like to start?
Yeah.
And which we haven't brought up today, but we talked about in the now shelved episode of this podcast. Russell Simmons, the founder of Def Jam, is Run's older brother.
Which I had no idea. I mean,
yeah, explains a lot.
Yeah,
but.
Well, there was a big schism too between why Def Jam, you know. Then you had Def American, and that's when.
Well, it started out Russell Simmons and Rick Rubin.
Right, and Rick Rubin, and there was there were other things going on, but one of the central disagreements that they had is that Russell Simmons wanted to move in more of the direction that, say, the Beastie Boys did, and Paul's Boutique using, you know, it was moving in a 70s funk and.
Mm.
And Rick Rubin really thought that he wanted to keep it more rock and roll and have the crossover and have rock elements in there. And so they split up. And that was, I mean, there were other things.
Well, this
obviously.
Record, it kind of toes the line between those two elements.
It does. And, you know, to Rick Rubin's detriment, actually, you can really see how his vision of hip hop to my ears was so much less inspiring than so much less fun to listen to than the other ones. Like, for example, Beats to the Rhyme. There, and this is another thing, too. I think that, and this is my own personal feelings about this, but I remember around the time that this album came out, or when, you know, when hip-hop was a nascent art form, people you'd hear people like, what? Why are you sampling a song? Just write your own goddamn song. And
was
so
that the guy whittling a stick in
that probably
yard?
Was. It probably was. Yeah.
That was an off-air conversation, but
oh yeah, that's right.
Shane told a really long meandering story that ended with a guy whittling
stick. So
25 minutes later,
and I'm sure they went back and picked up the dead deer on the side of the road too.
Sure.
But so I thought it was really interesting. Like the more access you had to samples, the more you're able to build an entirely new song out of just little snippets. But because people were so annoyed by people sampling, you ended up getting stuck. Because it costs so much, the way that the laws were structured, to use multiple samples in a song, we ended up, I mean, they don't use, there's not
well,
a lot
now
of...
now it's typically just one or two max
right.
per song, so they it does end up sounding like that song.
That song.
But back then, like, sampling was an art form.
It was an art form, yeah.
You could construct a new song out of elements of old ones.
If you listen right. to, if you listen to, in fact, this Beats the Rhyme is a good example, but if you listen to Tribe Called Quest, I mean, Q-Tip would spend all this time buying all these old records and then listening to the, like, get like just a couple second snippet of a song. You would never know what song that was from, and then incorporate that. Instead, what you ended up with was I'll Be Missing You by Sean Puffy Combs. You know, which is essentially the same song as Every Breath You Take by the Police.
Well, it's just another example of, you know, shooting for the middle. Like, you, frankly, there's a lot of money in the middle, but it's just not, it doesn't age well.
No, yeah, it's not inspiring in any way.
Let's
listen to Beats to the Rhyme, because this song is far and away my favorite Run-DMC song, and I don't think that's any small part. Because it innovatively uses samples, and also the way that they rhyme, there's so much more fluidity in there. That's it's more polyrhythmic. It's
no, there's some
more
beats
interesting.
In there. There's right, beats well, to the rhyme. DJs and MCs coming up next to one and only incredible. Yo, back up from the road, Paul. Beats to the rhyme. Yo! D, that's me, the king, the MC. Rhyme gig mine on a T.O.P. Can another MC ever fuck with me? Hell no. It's like the A, the B, to the C. It's easy. 1, 2, 3. DJ, that's a J, I'm D.M.C. So it is it's time for we to see. So what? So rhyme, let's speak your piece. Why? Cause you can't touch down, that's a J. Cause it's number 1, 2, 3, 4. Get it. That was Beats to the Rhyme. God damn, that was a good song. Kevin and I were talking about this during the break. I was like, fuck, I wish every song on this album sounded like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Followed down that path, yeah.
I think there's some stuff on this record that feels a little bit paint by number, and that song is inspired.
Well, it's push and pull. I mean, you can feel the two camps being pulled apart. It sounds like some of these songs were a little bit older, and they're cut from the cloth that where the stuff is a lot, the rhymes are a lot more so, like, you know, bump 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 bump.
I'm pretty sure Ragtime was an older song that they just tacked on there.
Do you think it was from the Ragtime era?
I'm pretty sure Scott Joplin had nothing to do with it, actually.
Yeah, I was gonna say that would be a lot older. I think that Ragtime song sounds a lot like Parents Just Don't Understand. Which is another really simplistic rhyming style too.
No, it's of the Dougie Fresh school of early hip hop.
Yeah, there's just
very sing-songy.
But Beats to the Rhyme is not that. It's
not that.
No,
leading in the direction that hip hop would take.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and a lot of the stuff sounds like, it kind of sounds like N.W.A. a little bit. Just throwing a lot of
N.W.A. Public Enemy.
Yeah, I mean, Public Enemy set that template in a lot of it. You know, it's really funny that I read a couple of years ago this person was a high school teacher. And I forget exactly what the subject they were teaching, but they brought in music all the time. And he was like, this is a seminal rap band, like really, really important in the history of rap, and played Public Enemy for all his students. And they were all like, what is this shit? Like, none of the, I mean, it bears no relation. And it is kind of atonal, music a lot. Like they use Coltrane solos that I mean they're yeah. it's aggressive.
I would probably take a few repeated listens at this point to get into Public Enemy for the first time.
I love it, but I think it's because I was, you know.
Well, it was just kind of around when and I were in high school.
It was pretty ubiquitous.
And early college. And,
if not their actual albums, but their samples. I mean, there's a Public Enemy sample in that song we just listened to.
Well, and one of the things that we talked about back when we did N.W.A. was sort of just the different tack that some of these acts took at that time. Like, you know, in N.W.A., they were a little bit more political, and there's certainly an element of politicism that has to do with Public Enemy, but there's
an
a
element?
Lot more. There's a lot. There was a well. Stay with me. Then, like, essentially, where I was going is that there's a lot more historical context with Public Enemy. They're very big on history. So,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
And Run DMC is not that. It's a light bite in some
yeah.
ways.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That makes
it's
sense.
A light bright.
It's a light bite. Like, not a light bright.
Light bright doing things with light.
Yes, exactly.
I was just thinking about
light. Such a primitive toy.
I was just thinking about light brights last week, and like where you put a little template up and push in lights, and you're like, whoa! And then if you were to show a child
a
light bright now,
what the hell?
It's like speaking to them in slow motion.
It's like the paddle with the rubber ball on the end of it at this point, and they're like, I'm just going to go play with my iPad now.
All right.
This game sucks.
All right, guys. It's intermission time. So Kevin brought along some cats this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get into that.
So we have just watched the Self video Runaway. Which, as I understand it, is Shane's favorite video of all time, if I'm not mistaken.
No. No, it's different than that.
It features performing cats.
And I love cats a lot.
A lot.
Don't get me wrong.
You guys are just raining all over greatness. So
it's actually a pretty good song.
It's a really good song. That's the thing. It's begging. It just seems like they were sort of like, let's have an OK Go type viral video.
Well, it does seem like a planned viral video.
Oh, without a doubt, it was planned.
I would argue. Well, two things. First thing is when we did this a few minutes with the last time that we recorded this episode, the famous lost episode. Shane's first response was, is this Self that band from the 90s? And I was like, well, yeah, and also today.
Yes.
And,
well, I don't.
Well, the difference is I think they do random capitalization in the name now.
Well, I'm sure that's probably true. But beyond that, the other thing is I would argue that it is a I think it is a self-aware riff on viral videos.
Like, it's a self-aware.
Yes. Like, what happened?
Dropping the knowledge.
I don't know.
What just happened?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. I mean, that's a good.
That's an extra textual reading.
I'd like to think that it is, but there's nothing.
Don't get Shane started on his Alex Jones rant.
There's nothing in the video that would give one
pause.
That would give one pause and and reflection. At first glance, one does not.
Well,
nothing that you would muse on.
No,
I thought it was perfect.
Well,
just step inside before we get older.
catch up to you one day. With one hand. So the thing to remember about Self is that essentially
it's like one dude.
Self is Matt McCaffrey, and it's a rotating cast of characters, some of whom have been there for a while. But he's got kind of a signature sound, and I feel like, you know, one of the reasons that I chose this song was that, like, I kind of feel like there are a few artists out there that are like Self, in that there is a really amazing song or two on just about everything they put out, but for whatever reason, they either haven't caught fire or the rest of what they do is kind of uneven, and so they sort of never
fly under the radar.
Yeah, a little bit under the radar, and he's been doing that for a long time. Anyway, I think the stuff that he does that's great is really fun, and so
there was a song on a CMJ compilation years ago that I made a bunch of mixtapes for people and passed out, and there were, like, lots of people were like, "Oh, I really like that Self song. Who the hell is that?" And I don't know.
Yeah, they had good stuff. I remember listening to them. I got them the first time they came across my radar was in the grab bag at South by Southwest, and I mean they were good songs. Like, but I think that they had like high peaks and low lows. I don't know. They never really got any traction. They never really got off the ground and did anything. But good stuff. And really commercial sounding stuff, I think, too.
No, you'd think that, it would have been, something would have crossed over into radio hit, but it just hasn't happened.
Well, the other thing is that these guys live in Murfreesboro.
I think they live in Nashville now, but I think they're from Murfreesboro.
Well, at the very least, well, and frankly, Murfreesboro is in the shadow of Nashville, so whatever. But the fact of the matter is that that they are. One of our old friends was in town from New York last night, and one of the things I was mentioning to another buddy.
You're talking about Mr. Black?
Yes, Mr. Black was in town, and another one of his running buddies who used to live here but now lives in Nashville. And I gave him I was like, I like Nashville a lot. Have you been to this place or this place or this place? And some of them he had been to and some of them he had not. And I was like, here's my unsolicited take on Nashville, which is that it's the L.A. of the South. And I believe that
I think that's easily
totally true. And
it's a pretty town.
Well, if you're looking to market and – I don't even know what would you categorize Self as? Like alt, like there are little elements of hip hop every now and then, but it's like kind of electronic bass, like a pop, electronic pop or something, I guess.
Yeah, but they weren't always like
maybe alt pop. Like, I mean, they're kind of like, that's sort of,
I don't know.
Yeah, but if
know.
You were trying whatever to means, market like, that sort of thing, I don't know that I would go to Nashville first. But.
Well, and I think that like to what we were talking about before, like I think that's where they're from. And so, anyway, you would think that even accidentally, maybe, you know, you'd sort of catch on because the stuff that they do well, they do really well. But anyway, at the very least, I thought I enjoyed that track before I ever saw that video. And then when I saw that video, knowing that Shane lives in a house with 47 cats, I was like, oh, this
would
be great.
Give or take 41.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I thought it would be appropriate, and that he would love it because the cats are shot lovingly and
I like the
special photography.
The shot with the one cat with the fan blowing on its whiskers, and its whiskers are blowing back.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty good.
It is.
Just learned something interesting about Mahaffey. The Expedia.com jingle.
Yeah.
On those commercials, the .com.
Really?
He wrote that.
That guy did that?
Yeah, he did that.
Well, that's how he's surviving all these years.
Yeah, he's doing fine. Work. Yeah, he's like, he's spending all that Expedia
it's
money.
By Menon.
All right, well, we don't have to spend all night on this. We got to get back to Run DMC, but thanks you guys for the chatter.
Okay, and we're back. I hope you guys enjoyed that cat video. Hopefully you snuck off to another computer so you could leave this up and you could go to another computer.
And your significant other will be shocked to find this in your browser history.
Well, yeah, because you can't watch more than one, you know, on a computer.
I was just checking up on him, and then I went to see that he's been watching cat videos, and I think that is adorable, and I don't know why your girlfriend sounds like Mitch Hedberg.
That's exactly what she sounds like, apparently.
So I wanted to point out something real quick, and we're talking about one more song here before we get to our brand new segment.
A Current Affair.
A Current Affair. And so that is, I just want to point this out, that I was very familiar with, well, in 1993, I believe, Cypress Hill put out an album, and I don't know if this is the
is that the cannabis enthusiast band?
They're quite the cannabis enthusiasts. But anyway, the song is Ain't Going Out Like That. Ain't going out like that. It exactly sounds just like how I just did it. I didn't. Oh, it's uncanny. It gives me chills when I do that.
Nasally 40-year-old.
But I don't know if it's a cover of the significantly wider Run-DMC title, which is I'm Not Going Out Like That.
Hard to say.
I'm not going out like that, Kevin.
Well, I mean, you're riffing, but I think you bring up actually a pretty salient point, which is that Run-DMC sometimes is very straightforward. Like, they're not. That was always a thing, like, with the. When we were. And I go back to the NWA thing that I mentioned earlier. It's like those guys, like, there are a lot of double entendres, or they would, like. They were constantly trying to sort of flip the script, and I, for lack of a better term, I don't think that Run-DMC does that as much.
I feel like at this point in hip hop history, like the rules weren't written down yet. You just kind of did whatever you did.
That's fair, and to be fair, this record came out before, like well before that other one did. So,
sure, it's true. Yeah, but it was a time of I was just making a joke, but it was a time of rapid growth and change in
rapid. Sorry, anyway, go ahead. Joke.
Ain't going out like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going out like that.
I'm not going out like that, sir.
I'm not.
I am not.
You. Good day, sir. I am not going out like that.
I said good day.
Didn't you have a boss like...
That's what when you parting quit. Words to me when she ripped me a new one for a reason she should not have, and I was supposed to wait on 20 people. And I said, you know what, Franny, I'm pretty much done here. I'm out. And she goes, good day, sir.
I bid you good day.
Yeah, she like stepped out of a 1940s film noir.
I said good day.
So we're going to talk about, Ryan, you wanted to talk about They Call Us Run-DMC.
Yeah, and I think this is, okay, so with Beach of the Rhyme, you kind of see where Public Enemy like picked up and ran with the ball. With They Call Us Run-DMC, to me, it feels like this is where the Beastie Boys kind of picked it up and ran with it.
Oh, sure.
So why don't we play a clip from that, and then we'll talk about it a bit, and then we'll get into the new segment.
Sounds good. Yeah, now that I waxed the crowd, I'm feeling proud and loud. Should have screamed when I sucker, but I stepped in bound. Now that I'm back the track, I'll attack for fun. Fall down back and black, it's never whack or lack. They're gonna rush, I'm back with rap when I attack. I'm stunning down Mac on track, and now I'm off and running. Don't sleep, there's speed because I keep on taking the lead with speed and record speed. I'm breaking.
Call us Run-DMC. Evidently, that's true. But no, what I was saying before we played the clip, to me, like I can definitely see a direct correlation between the Beastie Boys, you know, kind of picking that up and running with it. Specifically, What You Want.
You can hear some Eric B. and Rakim in that.
Well, I think the Beastie Boys reference is, and the other one's accurate too, but I think the Beastie Boys reference is probably feels the most linear because they were in some ways, certainly originally right off the top, like, felt like original descendants of that, but they also came from punk And then as they evolved, it's sort of hard to not look at it through that lens.
Well, but, and they toured with these guys, like, right around this time.
Sure, right.
Yeah, I mean, but that album didn't come out, like, for a couple of years. Like, stylistically, the way that they're rapping, I could see that, yeah.
Well, definitely, and this is, like, the most, of the record, I think the most Why Are You Yelling At Me song.
I was going to say, yelling at you, Ryan?
No, definitely. Like, more in your face. And
should we recap for the audience? Ryan doesn't like to be yelled at by his rap stars.
No.
Well, the fact is, I can't listen to an entire Beastie Boys record all the way through, because it just feels like they're yelling at me, and I'm
telling you to pick your clothes up off the
floor. Yeah, I'm an adult man. I don't need that.
Yeah.
You're not the boss of me.
Record that I own or am listening to.
Anyhow, anybody got any further words about they call us Run DMC? Because they do.
They did. I will tell you this. This is not directly related to this song, but as I was lacing up my shoes, Skylar was watching some show on, like, HGTV or something, and on the commercial.
Do any straight men watch that channel, by the way, of their own volition?
Home and Garden?
Yeah.
Well, we don't. We won't. I'm not going to sidetrack this broadcast with. That's not me, but but my father-in-law is a do-it-yourselfer.
Okay.
And watches some of that.
No, you answered the question accurately.
I've been caught in.
Some do.
I've come in and been like. Sat down like, what the fuck is this? And then 30 minutes later, like, yeah, we can watch the next one.
I like that alternate you always has a thicker accent than you do.
Yes.
What the fuck, man?
What the fuck is this? Oh, okay. Yeah,
I don't know what this HGTV is.
Hey, but keep it on. Don't change that goddamn channel.
Man, they just repotting the plant and shit.
And now everybody's become Larry the Cable Guy.
We're all trying out
for Shane's...
do you know that motherfucker doesn't have an accent?
He's from, like, Nebraska.
Yeah, or Indiana or something. That's not... He doesn't have that accent.
I bet he doesn't work for cable either.
No. Yeah. Pretty sure he doesn't.
He does?
If by not working for cable you mean he doesn't have a lot of commercials for Prilosec on, hey, you eat a bunch of shitty food? Take this pill. Your tummy will feel better.
Funny you should bring that up. as a part of a White Elephant gift, I gave a coworker a couple years ago a Larry the Cable Guy branded basically like Rice-A-Roni. And it's got a picture of him on the front, you know, and like, let's get her done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bought it at Big Lots.
Anyway.
Of course you did. Did you really?
Yeah.
Hey, at what point did you guys realize we had strayed from Run DMC?
Oh, yeah. So I was, anyway, there was a commercial. So for Rev Runs something. So Run after like they broke up or in the middle of it at some point, Run became a reverend.
And now Reverend Run.
Reverend Run. Rev Run, actually. And now he wears a collar. With
like Astros speaking to me now from the Jets.
Rev Run. And yeah, like he's like a preacher. In fact, I remember like seeing in the early 90s, like in 93, they put out like a Christian themed.
Mary, why art thou bugging?
Nice.
All right, so... That's enough, Run DMC. We got a new segment to get to. So,
Current Affair.
Coming back with Current Affair.
So that's a little bit of Golden Facelift from Broken Social Scene, and we have just watched the video. Kids, thoughts?
There's a lot going on there.
It's hard to formulate, like, having just seen it once, because the clips are so... Well, let's just first off just kind of say what...
So it starts out with like beautiful landscape shots. It's all, you know, like not still shots, but like video shots. Some beautiful like landscape portraiture, and then it kind of goes into like just a...
It devolves.
Highlight reel of all the fucked up shit that's happened...
Kind
in like
of in the last year,
yeah.
Pretty much. But it's such a quick clip. I mean, the song's called Golden Facelift, and at some point, like I kept it moves so quickly. Like the cuts are about a second long.
Well, the impression I got was that whoever edited that video is somebody who loves editing. And there's like I've got a radio TV film degree, and I hate editing. I fucking farmed that shit out when I could.
Well, I have a Mr. College degree.
Well, my point is I had
I
to
don't know
deal
why
with
it sounds like that.
My point is I had to deal with editing at some point in my schooling, and I fucking hate it. But there are people, they talk about getting into the zone where they're just like, you know,
that's
running on all cylinders, and it seems like whoever made this video like was in that zone.
That's all it was
I
editing.
I could see that. Yeah.
I mean, that's really all. I mean, there like I couldn't. I'm thinking there's a like I haven't had time to process this, but I think it'll take a repeated viewings because it goes so quickly. It's almost like a strobe light. Like each little shot lasts 1 to 2 seconds at most.
But most of them are things that like we'll recognize from the news cycle.
Yeah, you
the
all
last year.
A lot of them, like you know, people in protests and ISIS videos and
Bill Cosby
and stuff like that.
Gian Gomeshi.
And I think Shane, what you're getting at too is that because it's happening so quickly, by the time you process one. Like three more have already passed.
Yeah, so is that a commentary on the 24-hour news cycle?
That's actually not a bad reading of it. Like, I don't know. I didn't see the thing until a couple hours ago for the first time.
But then, so you have those images in the beginning of the planet and beautiful landscapes, and then at the end, you have horses running, you know,
together.
Well,
we go back to nature at the end
of it. And then we have this stuff in the middle, and there's all of these media, quick-cut media things, and all the...
You know, are just accelerated culture, all in the middle of it.
But then it's interspersed with pictures of plastic extreme plastic surgery and plastic surgery gone wrong. And I can't help but feel that it's a commentary on we're caring about the wrong things. Like we're spending too much time ruminating on shit that doesn't really matter and letting this other stuff slip away from us that really matters.
No, I think that's smart.
The other thing that occurs to me is that it does sort of devolve from utopian to dystopian. And as you get further along, the cuts get quicker. And so where it starts with these sort of long, drawn-out, you know, languid vistas, you get languid vistas.
Yeah.
that's what I'm going to call my cover band. But you get to the end, and it's very, very jump-cutty and very jarring. And the images are intentionally often disturbing, or at the very least, familiar enough with things that are disturbing that you're like sort of like, as Mark said, like processing it as the next terrible thing comes along.
See, to me, that's like shout rap for the eyes. That's like the Beastie Boys.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I can get that, especially and like to me, I don't really like seeing plastic surgery as it's happening, and there are three.
I don't
shots.
Like seeing plastic surgery after it's happened.
Well, no.
Like if you see a man, if like when Kenny Rogers got plastic surgery a few years ago, I remember thinking, and I heard somebody say this.
You're like, no one to hold him, buddy.
Yeah, no one to hold him way too back. I remember thinking, like, you don't look any younger. And then not long after that, I heard somebody say, like, you get plastic surgery, you don't look any younger. You just look like you had plastic surgery.
Yeah, that might be true. We can go down the rabbit hole on this stuff, too. We won't. But I think that there are, if you are one of the people who got, if you're the guy that, or the lady that got plastic surgery and nobody knew and you just look better, that'd be a great story.
That's
but
the
nobody
thing.
Ever hears about that because there's so
well,
many
that's,
terrible
and that's
cases
the thing.
Out there.
I won't go too in detail about this, but I had a lady friend who it turns out had an augmentation, but you totally couldn't tell. She was like, I know, right? Like they feel totally real.
Yeah, see, I think people should go into we're not talking about the song, but I think people should go into the doctor's office. And when he goes like, I'm going to make you look 20 years younger. No, just make me look 4 years younger. That's when you can't notice.
Oh, that's
you know?
Good. Yeah. You know, look, doc, no need to be a hero. Yeah, just me, just a few.
I'm holding out for a hero.
Because that shit's plastic. So in 16 years, you will look 20 years younger.
Maybe.
Oh. Anyway, let's.
All right.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Hey, we didn't talk about the song, by the way.
Yeah. So
great song.
Yeah. Good
bass
song.
Bass driven.
Yeah.
And very clearly, like, it's clearly of the broken social scene canon.
I mean, good band.
Kind of big long intro, and then it kind of does like a sort of Teenage Riot kind of thing in the middle, like where it picks up guitar.
It's almost in three parts. It kind of
yeah,
and it comes out of it, and that's when they reintroduce the languid vistas, as it were.
I definitely give this
now
one.
You just ripping me.
We need to come up with some sort of rating for this new song. Like, I'll definitely give this a.
Are we going out of 10?
A-OK.
You giving an A-OK?
Yeah,
I'll give it an okie doke.
All right. So A-OK is the top, okie doke is the middle. What is the last?
Well, no, okie doke is like 4 stars.
I'll give it a running high five.
Okay, so where are so running high five, that's like at the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, running high five.
That's an A plus.
A-OK, okie doke.
Depending on how you do it.
And what's the last one?
Sad trombone.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Works. Wah, wah.
Sad trombone, okie doke, A-OK, running high five. Yeah. I'm going to give that an A-OK.
Well, I think I liked it better than okie doke. I'd say
A-OK.
A-O-doke.
All right, so that's like 2.5 stars.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
I liked
about
it better than that, actually. But
All right.
Anyway, it's not the greatest song I ever heard, but I did enjoy it.
It's pretty
this
good.
Is,
yeah.
Read a real quick little piece from the press release. That the band said about this video. They said Golden Facelift is a song recorded during the Forgiveness Rock record sessions. I think that was back in 2010.
They actually recorded
it. But ultimately did not make the final cut for one reason or another. It is a song we as a band all felt strongly about lyrically and musically, and we wanted to give it a proper unveiling when the time was right. We feel that chance is now as this year draws to a close. 2014 has not been without its beauty, but it has also been a year of incredible brutality, and all of humanity has a great deal to answer for. Broken Social Scene aims to echo the voice and concerns of the underdog while creating music that will hopefully inspire those who are doing good and useful things for this planet and humankind.
That was written by a publicist.
No, it sounds like more of a band, right? Maybe the publicist cleaned it up.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that. I mean you don't
it
have
sounds
a,
genuine. It sounds like
yeah,
no,
you don't
I,
have a
no,
publicist writing about
going for,
beauty and truth and stuff for all mankind. You have a publicist.
Well, it was Broken Social Scene. Broken Social Scene strives to. Anyway, I don't know. It sounded a little official to me, like towards the end.
But I do think that it also
like it was
really explains
purpose.
A lot about the video.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's true.
And the video is definitely worth watching for anybody who's listening. Like, it's a. Entertaining.
I'll say good pick. On
so
that
at
one,
the very you. Least, see it once to know what we're talking about. Thanks, Ryan, for picking that one.
Yeah, there's a couple of, just be warned, there's a couple of very brief.
If you are squeamish.
Very, very brief pictures of plastic surgery on someone's
like
eye.
Like eye tucks.
Yeah.
It appears
yeah.
that they are.
But I mean, like.
And I don't enjoy seeing that, but.
About a second long yeah. each one, so. All right, boys. So we said this last week, but this next week. Is the album that we were going to do this week.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a continuity issue. So we'll like.
So we're going to be doing Kinks.
Yes.
Which I have conveniently already listened to now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
Kinks
so,
of the Village
so
Preservation
that's gonna
Society.
Happen, but just know that that if, well, anyway, if there's some continuity issues between last week's recording, which was actually recorded after the first time that we laid this one down.
We're just trying to make this as M.C. Escher as possible.
Yes, exactly.
If you get confused, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope. P.O. Box 872.
Somebody likes it. 1010, fuck you, town.
Care of the mean lady next door.
Come, bitches.
Anyway, this was fun, you guys.
Yeah, I had a good time with it. Let's not do it a third time.
Let us not.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and sign off. We're going to do the Kinks next week. I'll let you guys come up
Village
with
Green Preservation
whatever
Society.
You're going to do. Just, yeah.
Sure.
Song-wise. And, yeah, we'll talk about it. All right, so I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
I'll see you next week.